fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy, fighting to save the day. He never gives up, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare.
G.I. Joe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another installment of Super Podcast in Conversation, the wonderful new mini-series here at supermarcy.com as part of the Super Network. I am your host, Super Marcy, because who else is it going to be? It's my show. I'm the host. And today, I have a really cool and special guest. He is a bit of a wanker, but that's why we love him. He is currently the editor-in-chief at joeblow.com. So please welcome, and I'm going to say his name wrong because I've already forgotten how to say it, Paul Shri? I've already forgotten how to say it.
Oh my goodness. I'm actually glad that you messed it up because this way I can clarify. It's Shiri.
Fuck!
It's okay.
I get
Shirley every now and again. People just add an L arbitrarily, just toss it in there. But that just gives me a chance to use the Leslie Nielsen line from Airplane, which is, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, I've already forgotten how to say your name. It's not a Super Podcast episode in any shape or form if I am not fucking up someone's name.
That's all right.
I blame the Aussie. Aussies can't say anything. But really, we can't, so it's fine. How do we say it again? I want to say it right. Say it again.
Shiri. There you go, you got it.
Please welcome Paul Shiri to the show.
Can you add applause in there?
There you go.
Maybe have like a applause track for later, the post.
Post add applause. And I've called you a wanker, so we're already old friends.
Is that a term of endearment in Australia?
It can be.
You wanker.
You're a
wanker. It seems like it would be.
You fucking cunt can be taken either way.
Yeah, I mean, you say that in America, that's like fighting words, especially for the ladies.
That's
bringing out the big guns, and it's like,
I hear that.
Totally different meaning in, like, Australia and Great Britain.
Yeah, no, we just, you know, that's, like, my favourite word to say, because I always say it. I'm always saying, you fucking cunt. But it's either an insult or a term of endearment, so take it whichever way you want.
Yeah, all right. Just have to decipher it. I guess if I piss you off, I'll know which one I'm hearing.
Yeah, you'll hear me when I'm angry. Fucking cunt!
What do you say, what is like for Australia, what is like the ultimate like fuck you in that regard?
It's probably just calling someone a cunt or a wanker or a fuckhead.
You call a cunt or a wanker as a friend, so it is really...
Yeah, you can't tell.
A complete term of endearment or a complete...
Or I guess fuckhead is one... Or I tend to call people a cunt stain.
A cunt stain. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just getting graphic.
Yes.
What's wrong with you guys?
I don't know. We've been asking ourselves that for a very long time.
And you call cookies biscuits and vice versa. That's just weird.
Well, if it's like chocolate chip cookies, they're cookies.
But if I were to say I wanted biscuits and gravy, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, I wouldn't know why would you want biscuits with gravy?
Why would you want that? It's like, well, because it's delicious. for one, and two, that's it, the end. Just
I
one.
I don't so get it. What is biscuits and gravy? I'm so confused right now.
It's cookies and gravy.
Why would you eat that?
What the hell's wrong with you guys?
Like fries and gravy, yes.
A friend of mine told me that used to live in Australia that she went there and like the first place they went was a McDonald's. And she ordered biscuits and gravy. She said they looked at her like she was nuts. And they're like, what are you talking about? And then it was like cookies and gravy that was on the menu. And that's what she got, which is what biscuits and gravy are in America.
But who has gravy and...
You just need to calm your tits.
I will not calm my tits. They are not calm right now. I'm looking at them and they're not calm. They have no idea what's going on right now.
Very angry.
Yes. What the hell? Obviously, we're not here to talk about biscuits or cookies and gravy.
Or tits. Or are we here to talk about tits?
We can talk about tits all you want. That's fine.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with
it. Well, obviously, well, we're here to talk about you because you're very interesting, apparently. Or so I've been told.
I mean, who told you that?
I don't know, but a few people have, like, said, have that dude on. So I'm like, yeah, I will, because he's cool, and I like him. And I, like, always, like, stalking his Instagram.
That bloke.
That fucking bloke who's a wanker.
Loudmouth wanker bloke on Twitter that's always talking shit.
Is it British or Australian? Because I can't tell.
That's like, it's both. I mean, you guys are basically British criminals anyways.
We are. We're like the British rednecks.
Yes, exactly.
Basically. If you want to be Australian, just copy like Captain Boomerang in Suicide Squad.
I will just move to England and I will become a burglar, a criminal, and then get deported to Australia.
Yeah.
And then become an Australian. Is that how you become an Australian?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. You have to commit a crime first. Extra points if it's a hate crime. Was that too dark?
I don't know if I can help you there.
I don't know.
Well, we're not going to go that route.
Nope. Nope. Moving on. Yeah. Now that everybody listening to this has switched off completely, we can get into the nitty-gritty of it. Let's talk about your life. I want to hear your life story. When did you lose your virginity?
18.
Really?
Really.
Who was
it? When did you lose yours?
I was 19.
Ah, beat you by a year, sucker.
Yeah. I waited till I was a lady.
I mean, if I had any choice in the matter, it probably would have been a lot earlier, but...
Oh, really? You weren't a ladies' man in your younger years?
No, man. You know, I was like a nerd in high school. I was like a complete, you know, I read comics, I drew comics, I wrote. You know, I did all the things I do now for the most part. I just didn't really work out or anything back then.
But back then, it wasn't cool.
No. I mean, when I say nerd in that regard, I was a nerd back then, like... in a derogatory sense. Like, oh, Paul's a fucking nerd. You know, he reads comics. Hey, nerd. You know.
Yep.
And I would just never disown that part of myself or sell it out to become something else. I was just too invested in it. So, you know, I was perfectly fine just being the nerd. But, you know, I got to my senior year of high school and I, you know, wanted to touch a vagina. So, you know, I got shape and, you know, finally, you know, cross that next point into manhood.
Mm.
I think everybody kind of reaches that point at some point where you're like, okay, well, I mean, comics are great, but I would like to touch a woman at some point in my existence. So, you know, that comes about. But I was just never somebody that was going to compromise the things that I enjoyed, just like I don't now.
Mm.
You know, so that's pretty much it.
Well, we do have that in common because I was a nerd growing up. Nobody was into anything I was into. Nobody liked Star Wars or Star Trek or comics or superheroes or whatever. Nobody watched movies as much as I did. Nobody read books. I was a social outcast.
reading books. Yeah. Who reads books?
Yeah.
You mean read the words?
Yep.
That's like reading an article without going right to the comments section. Who does that?
Yep. I would read. I'd read like 4 or 5 novels a week. And this was when I was like 11.
That's good.
Yeah, and I mean like Stephen King sort of stuff.
I still read regularly, but when I was in high school, there was never a point that I didn't have a book that I was reading.
I always had.
Dork. And I would have. It was so bad that I would have. Like, teachers would strike up conversation with me about the book I'm reading. And none of my fellow students would be like, "Oh, you're reading the new Michael Crichton? Like, you know, what's that story? Or how's, you know, whatever." I would have teachers be like, "Oh, hey, how is that?" But you would never have another student be like, "Hey, how's that? Is that book good?"
No.
Yeah, just never connected with anybody. And again, that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily better or worse than anybody. It just meant that I read more than most.
Me better than everybody else because I was educated. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's, the sad fact is, you know, quite a few, I'm not speaking for the entire population, but there is a large percent of the population that could give two shits about reading. You know, they don't want to read. They want to watch a video or see a Facebook status update or some link that kind of justifies what they're actually thinking rather than to actually dive a little deeper and change their perspective or get a little more out of something. So,
yeah.
It's just sad
state. Were you bullied in school? Because I was totally bullied in school.
Oh, yeah. You know, early on in my high school years, I was. And then by my senior year, I started to get in shape, and then I started to, like, work out and do stuff like that. And, you know, I didn't have any issues after that. And it was, like, at that point, I kind of just disconnected, and I was just kind of, like, just full-on outcast in that sense, but not in a negative way. It was just kind of, like, it's like I had kind of stepped out of the realm of everything. I literally aligned with zero groups. I was a complete lone wolf. And I just did my own thing, and I just didn't give a fuck. Like, same as I am now, I don't give a fuck. So,
clearly.
Yeah, I don't.
You don't give a fuck.
I care about, there's things I care about, but I mean, I don't care about being part of a group think tank. Like, this has just absolutely never been my thing. Mm-hmm. Which is ironic, because, you know, I joined the army, but, at the same time, that was for very different reasons. I never joined the army to become, because I wanted to be like everybody else. Very different reasons, but just overall, that's just my personality. I've always been somebody that just does not align with the group. I don't want to be the group. Either I'm leading the group or I'm by myself. End of story.
So you're a lone wolf.
Yes.
Do you howl at the moon?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you go outside and just howl.
Oh, just or from my bed.
Oh. Well, you got to go outside, strip off, and just howl at the moon and let the animal instincts take over.
Well, I mean, that just depends on how many drinks I've had.
No, you gotta do it stone cold sober first.
Yeah. Yes. Doing it sober doesn't really yield the same results.
I don't know, I do it, it's fine.
Well, you're a better person than me.
Yeah, I know, people might look at me weird, but no, so what?
Of course.
I'm cool. I'm cool now. Like,
I don't know. I would never say I'm cool per se. I just am. Like, I just am who I am. Like, I mean, I just don't care. Like, I'm always just going to follow the things that I have a passion for. It's never going to be something where I'm like, oh, well, I need to start liking this, or I need to start watching this or reading this because that's what the thing is. Like, I don't give a shit about that. If it doesn't speak to me, I'm not going to waste my time. And I don't think anybody should. I think that's just the wrong way to go about things. So
that's why you're cool. That's what cool is.
I guess. I'm not even pretend to know what cool is.
I don't know what cool is. I'm just saying I'm cool.
But I mean, who defines cool? Like
me.
Besides Marcy, who defines?
Nobody defines cool.
Exactly. Like, it's all just, you know, it's all these, you know, little clicks.
Is
it always saying, hey, this is cool, that's awesome.
I don't know, it's just a bunch of crap that people do to make themselves feel better than everybody else. Which is why I'm cool, because I think I'm better than everybody else. Why not?
I don't. You know, this is my philosophy. I think that the entire world is full of shit, including myself. We're all full of shit. Everybody. And we all think we know more than we really know. And I think that if we all just took a minute and just said, you know what, I don't know a fucking thing. So let's go from there, because then you can really start from a true, honest level. But you have too many times people fighting to be right or fighting for an opinion on something they don't really believe is true, and they give it their all, and it's such a waste, such a waste of energy and effort. If you just said, I actually don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Why don't we just discuss this? Maybe then I'll kind of come to an understanding instead of me sitting here trying to fight for some shit that I may or may not believe is true. I think most of the world is doing that. Most of the world is fighting for some shit they think might be real or true or speak to them, but it doesn't. So, again,
I think you're on point.
Shit. Everybody's full of shit.
Everybody is full of shit. Except me, because I'm the most pure and beautiful person ever.
Except for Marcy.
Yeah.
If she has way too many Star Wars boss toys.
Yes, I do. He makes my life complete. He really does.
A lizard bounty hunter is all you need in this world.
That's right. This is what makes me better than everybody else. And if I didn't have my big ego, I may as well just jump off a cliff.
Don't do that.
I'd survive because I'm that awesome.
That's true. You would just float midair. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, shit.
I'm fucking fantastic, Paul. What can I say? Now that whole conversation from about losing your virginity, let's talk about your joining the army and all of that. Because I mean, I know about it. I don't know that much about it. And I want to know more because, I mean, in my lifetime, I've known a few people, Aussies, that have joined our army and done stuff like that. But aside from maybe a couple of people, I don't know all that much about why you do it over there and what happens, what you've done. I want to know everything. So this podcast is going to be about 10 hours. So
everything. Wow.
Yep. I want to know, like, from sign up. No, you tell me your story because I want to know it. I want to get inside the mind of Paul. Might be dangerous.
Shiree.
I remembered.
Well, it's a mixed bag. I won't bore you with the entire story because it's really not that interesting. But I think a lot of it comes with just how I grew up. I was a fan of kind of the pop culture aspect, like G.I. Joe and things like that.
You
and
wanted to be G.I. Joe. You wanted to be Sergeant Slaughter. There's my wrestling reference.
No, I wanted to be Flint. Flint was my G.I. Joe. But, you know, I grew up kind of in that culture. Like, nobody in my family, other than my grandfather, who was in World War II, were really into the military. There was no pressure to join the military or anything like that. But I was always into it, you know. I grew up with, you know, all the same movies that everybody did in the 80s, you know, Predator and all the Schwarzenegger movies and all the Stallone movies, and the Mel Gibson movies, you know, you're just watching all these guys go around and just be total badasses and kick ass. And, you know, it was influential and inspirational in many ways. But I always knew that it was fantasy, but I always had a fascination with it. And then, you know, same thing with G.I. Joe. I was just kind of fascinated with military culture. And I remember when when Desert Storm kicked off, I remember watching the news as the planes were taking off and they were like, well, that's it. You know, we're going to war. Mm. And I think I was like 12 at the time or something like that. And there was no way I could join and do anything at that time. But I remember watching that thinking, God, I wish I was there. I wish I was a part of this. I just wanted to be a part of it. And I couldn't explain it, but I knew I couldn't. There was nothing I could do. It wasn't going to happen. So, you know, flash forward, you know, many years later, 9/11 happens, which was a day that deeply affected me, as it did many Americans. And it affected people in different ways. And for me, I felt very vulnerable and stupid. I felt like I didn't understand why we were being attacked. I didn't get it. Like, I felt like a complete moron. Like, I was living kind of in a dream state. You know, kind of living in the Matrix, I guess you could say. Like, you're just, like, everything was, I mean, because everything was perfect. I was planning on moving to L.A. many months afterwards. And what ended up happening is that 9/11 hit, and all of my friends that I was going to move to L.A. with, they all moved. They went to L.A. And I joined the Army instead. But, you know, a big part of it was me trying to understand my world. I didn't understand it, and I needed to make sense of it. And I couldn't follow through with anything else until I did. And beyond that, like, I felt like for Americans, for us, it's like this was a moment in history, and there was not going to be another opportunity for me to prove myself in that sense, and I would never get another chance. I mean, I was 25, so I was like, it's now or never, do or die. Like, either you do it now and or don't do it and regret it forever. And I knew I would. I knew I would think back, and I'd be one of those guys that's like, yeah, I thought about joining, but... But I knew that I just at that point, I knew that I had to do it. I had to find out. And I also, beyond that, I wanted to find out if I could do it. Mm. Could I hack it? Like, could I actually do this? You know, because up to that point, I was like, I'm going to be a filmmaker. I'm going to move to Hollywood. I'm going to make those dreams come true. I was in film school. I was already making films in Chicago. Like, everything was in motion. And so that was a huge change of plans right there. So, but that was it. So I joined, and originally I took the ASVAB, which is the army test they give you, and it kind of gives you a score, and they're like, oh, you know, you scored in the high percentile. You can pretty much do any job you want. And they're like, you should do like military intelligence or something like that. And I was like, no, I want to do like the whole, I want the show. I want to be an infantryman. I want to, you know.
Damn.
I want the real army, not the bullshit safe stuff. So I became a paratrooper. And
damn.
Yeah, from there it was.
I think I knew that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, you go to infantry school, which is 19 weeks OSIT in Fort Benning, Georgia. And then I went straight from there to airborne school.
Wow.
And I had the opportunity to go to Ranger school, but I actually opted out because by the time airborne school was over, I was like, I am done. I cannot take another day of training. And there's all these horror stories about Ranger tryouts too, which is very different. There's a lot more that goes into Rangers than what people think. And they basically were filling quotas, so I was like, I'm not even going to play that game. So I just went straight to my unit. I had requested to go to Alaska. It was my first requested duty station, which you don't always get. I ended up getting lucky.
How come you wanted to go there?
You know, it was just one of those places where you're like, I'll never go to Alaska. You know, you're like, I'll never go there.
Mm.
I was like, I would love to see it. You know, it would be so great to see it. So I was like, that was my first choice. It was Alaska, Germany, and Italy. And Hawaii. Those are my overseas duty station choices.
Quite different.
My first one was Alaska, and I got it. And I was like, fuck yeah. So that was super cool. I remember my airborne instructors at the end, when they give you your orders after you finish jump school, you know, I was like a new private. I didn't know shit. And they're like, they're trying to make it sound like it was a punishment. They're like, you're going to Alaska. You didn't know that, did you? And I was like, and I remember thinking in my head when they told me that, I was like elated. I was so happy. I was like, fuck, thank you, God. And I was like, oh, yeah, damn it. Yes, Sergeant Airborne, I understand. Like, I was trying to act like disappointed, but I probably didn't pull it off very well because I was like fucking stoked. So I came to Alaska and was joined the 501st Parachute Infantry Regiment, which is the only Arctic airborne regiment in the Army. And just hung around here for a couple years, went to war a couple times. Had some interesting and challenging and horrible experiences there, and then decided it's time to get out after that. I did a little bit of reserve time just to finish out my overall contract, so I think I finished it like nine or 9.5 years. I always just say 10 years. I just round it up. It's just easier to say. So it's basically about 10 years.
Wow.
All said and done.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. But, you know, I don't regret it. I don't regret a day of it. I don't regret my worst day because, you know, those are, you can't buy experiences like that. You can read about them, but you're not going to know them. Mm. You're not going to feel them. So, interesting.
Tell me about some of the really bad times, or is that something you don't want to talk about?
No, I don't mind talking about it. I mean, I think that I always say, and I know a lot of veterans groups say that, you know, if you don't tell your own story, somebody's going to tell them for you. So, you know, I went to Afghanistan in 03, 04, and surprisingly in that time frame was not as bad as it is now.
Hmm.
We took contact from time to time. It was not a bad deployment overall. Like, we went on tons and tons of missions, but, you know, they weren't, I don't think a lot of people don't realize, like, how, like, strict and regimented it is. I think most people are raised on Oliver Stone's fucking platoon and Full Metal Jacket, and they think that soldiers just run around and, you know, trample villages and do all this, like, really fucked up shit. And it's just not true at all. Like, there's such a misconception about what boots on the ground soldiers do. Like, you are monitored in everything you do. There's command and control in everything you do. They don't just hand you weapons and ammo and say, go do your thing. Like, people just don't fucking get it. But, you know, bottom line, we did a lot of missions. There were some, you know, moments of contact. A couple times had some rockets fired at us and some small arms fire. But more than anything, it was a lot of mountain climbing.
Okay.
With a shit ton of gear. I've literally traversed, I can remember a point wearing like all this gear, carrying an AT-4, which is what most people would call a bazooka, on my back, and an M4, which is the standard rifle. And I remember coming up on top of this mountain. I remember looking out, and I just looked over at my buddies, and I was like, I can't fucking believe we just climbed this shit.
Damn.
Like, with our military gear, how the fuck did we just climb this? It was kind of baffling. I'm like, how is this even possible? I'm seeing clouds up here. Shouldn't we have, like, climbing gear and shit? And instead we're, like, weighted down with so much garbage.
Damn.
It was baffling to me. And I still think of that to this day. I remember just looking out and seeing, like, the entire fucking countryside just being like, Jesus.
Wow.
But anyways, Afghanistan, we ended up, you know, we left. I think we didn't lose a single guy in the Afghanistan deployment. We had, you know, plenty of injuries, but we didn't lose anybody, which was kind of like a miracle. I call it like the miracle deployment. Like, nobody was killed. But I think we were kind of spoiled, because then in 06, 07, I went to Iraq, and I was part of the personal security detachment for my command. Which is basically like your security guards for your commander and your command sergeant major, the higher guys for your battalion. And basically my job was to protect them. But the thing is, they don't really want to be protected. They just want to have like their own little squad of guys that they can use to like kind of have you be their chauffeurs and take them around and do whatever squad stuff they want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in what they call the Triangle of Death, which is south of Baghdad. And this particular deployment was one of the bloodiest we've ever had. We lost 35 guys throughout the deployment. Lost many friends, guys that I trained with. My medic on my personal security detachment team, he was blown up in front of me, about 10 meters in front of me as we were both running. So if I had been running any faster than him, it would have been me. And it was, I mean, we got blown up a lot. There's actually video on YouTube. You can watch me get blown up on one of our missions when we were literally just crossing the road and an IED that was planted in the road blows up.
Wow.
That was a hell of a day. So that was a very challenging deployment, probably one of the most eye-opening, and I was in a leadership role at that time too, and that was brought its own challenges, whereas in Afghanistan I was just what they call a Joe. You know, you do what you're told, and life is pretty easy as a Joe. It's very easy when somebody's just telling you what to do, but when you have to tell other people what to do, it's a whole other ballgame, especially when their lives are at stake. So Iraq definitely took its toll, and I didn't really feel the effects of Iraq until right after I got out, because your mindset is so in it. You know, it's not a light switch that you just turn off where you're just like, you come home and you're like, well, I'm back now. all good. I don't have to think about IEDs or people trying to shoot me or blow me up anymore. It's all good. I can just turn that little dial off. But the truth of the matter is, once you do that, you can't turn it off for life. I'm sure maybe there's a couple guys that have managed to do so, but I haven't found a way to do that. So, you know, that stays with you. But in a weird sort of way, you don't ever want to turn that off. Because it's like, it is a part of you. It's like in your DNA at that point. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, there's obviously lots of...
There's lots more, but yeah.
Lots of details there, but that's your nitty-gritty overall for my military experience.
Just going back to what you just said about, like, you come back, but you just never switches off. I'm trying to remember, there was a doco I watched about that. I can't remember the name, but it focused on a soldier who came back after he got, I think, half his hip blown off or something, and it just shows the back and forth of him trying to adjust back at home between him. I think he was in Afghanistan. And
I think I might have seen it. You know, a question I get asked...
Because I find that stuff interesting, just to say. It's something I watched and just had no idea about it.
Yeah. No, you know, one question I get a lot is what films most represent, like, real military? And my first response is always, there's a documentary called Restrepo. And I think that is, I'll never watch it again. I watched it once. I could never watch it again because it is literally like reliving the entire experience again. And it's just all too real, in that regard. So I always recommend people to watch it because I think that if you really want to get a feel for actual how soldiers are, how combat is, what it's like to lose a guy in the midst of battle, Restrepo is, it's a gut punch. And then in terms of filmed entertainment, Black Hawk Down really is not too far off the mark. It's a little exaggerated in some parts, but it's actually pretty on the money. And then there's an HBO miniseries called Generation Kill about the invasion of Iraq, which is, I wasn't a Marine, I was a paratrooper, but we all speak the same language. And Generation Kill is great. And I highly recommend anybody that wants to kind of get a firm grasp on the realism and the fucking absolute bullshit that goes on sometimes. Mm-hmm. It really captures, like, how fucked up shit can get. And it's a very, like, honest portrayal, and that's what I really respect about it. Because it shows the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's kind of funny, too. I mean, it's very funny because, I mean, in truth, soldiers and Marines and sailors, they're pretty funny guys. I mean, it's true.
You're not making me laugh, so I don't know. I can't say for sure.
Hilarious right now, but... No, I mean, when you're in that environment, it's a very... It is kind of like that gung-ho environment in that sense, but it's funny. It's like frat boys with guns in many ways, but these are highly trained frat boys. These are guys that just that are, you know, drunk shooting off rounds. Like, they know what the fuck they're doing. Most of them. Let's, you know, there's bad eggs in every basket. So
that's true.
That's a factor too.
That is very.
But yeah, I highly recommend those for anybody that really wants to get a good feel for realistic combat, realistic war stories, things like that. I think those are some great starting points. And I hope there's more stories that come about. You know, I mean, American Sniper's got some interesting stuff going on, but I feel like it's more sensationalized than anything. And I think the stuff at home is more gripping than anything that takes place overseas. And I've read Chris Kyle's book, and the deepest respect for Chris Kyle. I know I love when some people are like, he's a murdering psychopath. And I'm like, dude, you may as well just call us all murdering psychopaths if you think that's the case. Because that's the same mindset that every fucking, you know, true blue infantryman, soldier, sniper, SEAL has. That's the way it is, like it or not. And those are the people that are protecting you one way or another, regardless of your army, too. It really doesn't matter. You know, the military all speaks the same language, regardless of their nation. They all have that same kind of camaraderie. So, yeah, American Sniper is kind of a mixed bag. And I really like Lone Survivor until the end. The end of Lone Survivor is kind of...
I haven't seen it, so don't, like, ruin it for me.
It's so cobbled together in the events that actually transpired, but okay. The first two-thirds of Lone Survivor are very much like Restrepo in that sense. It's a gut punch. And I can't watch those movies without... I just sit at the edge of my seat and I gnaw my fingernails and I am there. Like, I am in that moment. I cannot watch a war movie to this day without being there. It completely, it's like something just washes over me. I sit there and I'm in it. You can't take me out of it. I think that speaks to anybody that's seen combat, you know.
I'm sure it does. Not that I can't compare, because obviously I haven't done it. I can only sit back and, you know, talk to people like you or try and watch things and get more of an insight, which is obviously why I try and watch documentaries, even though I know sometimes they can be one-sided. But I can't remember its name, but I just found that one I mentioned earlier just interesting because it shows the contrast of being at home and then being out and just having something taken away from them because he was injured. And I did see Restrepo, and that kind of came out with another similar doco, which I think was Armadillo, which I saw as well.
I've seen Armadillo as well.
And I think there are more, but my brain doesn't work, so.
There's one that I absolutely despise, and it is an Oscar winner, which goes a long way in kind of, it's a telling thing that The Hurt Locker won Best Picture because it kind of shows the complete disconnect of how people, particularly many Americans, think war is and how it is. When a movie like that wins Best Picture, and it's so grossly inaccurate and fucked up and just paints a portrait of soldiers, particularly in this sense, EOD, and how nothing in that film is accurate in terms of what they do. It is just so off the fucking mark.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, like, what films are, like, just complete shit? And so, obviously, for you, it's that. Which I've heard from other people with similar things.
It was so disappointing because I'm such a huge Kathryn Bigelow fan. I love her work. I love her style. And I was like, fuck, this is so great that she's doing this. And I remember watching it, and it was like this slow roll. And I was fresh off the boat, too, like fresh from Iraq watching it. And it was just like every scene, I was like, oh, what the fuck? It just kind of got worse and worse and worse. By the time it was over, I was so mad. I wrote a whole, like, review. I think it's still up on my old blog site about just basically what a piece of crap it is. And, like, the best scene of the movie is the very end when Jeremy Renner's character is at the grocery store. And he's standing there, and he's looking at this wall of cereal. And it's just so vibrant and colorful, and he's staring at it, and it's overwhelming. And that, for me, was the most powerful scene because that's real. Like, that is something, when you come back from the desert where everything is OD green and sand and just, you know, washed out, and all of a sudden you're in an American grocery store, it is like a rainbow just exploded in your eyeballs. And it is like, you can't take it. It's too much. And, you know, that portion of his character where he's like, I have to get the fuck out of America and get back to war makes so much sense. Because the truth of the matter is, things are pretty simple at war. Whereas in real life back here, which war is still real life, but back here where like so many things are so arbitrary, you're like, oh, this is very important. We need to take care of this. And you're like, fuck that, man. I used to man an outpost where people were trying to fucking kill me.
Yeah.
Like, that was my thing, like, was to defend this outpost, and that was it, and to kill the enemy. The end. And here, it's like, oh, you got to go here and do this and fill out this form and turn in this paperwork. And you got to go grocery shopping. You got to pay this bill. And, oh, shit, your car broke down. You got to fix your car and all this other stuff. I'm like, dude, I just want to be manning an outpost and eating an MRE for dinner. It's, like, so much simpler. So it's crazy. But, I mean, that was the most true scene in that film. The rest of it is complete fucking garbage. Don't waste your time on it.
I've already seen it, so it's, you know. It's not like I watched it to for accuracies or anything.
Well, I've heard a lot of people be like, oh, man, that sucks. It was so entertaining, and it was like, I really liked it. And I'm like, I hear you, man. Like, Kathryn Bigelow, she's a great filmmaker, but she boloed that one. And in contrast, I think she did a great job with Zero Dark Thirty, which I really loved. And there's, you know, men that were on that actual SEAL team that conducted that exercise that can speak to its accuracies and inaccuracies, because there are some, but...
I don't think you can do something 100% accurate, so...
Yeah, it's tough.
At the end of the day, it is a film, so they're never always going to be...
It's very difficult to capture the reality of combat anyways. We have, like, very... Every unit has the same... We all train off the same types of tactics, you know, they're army-wide or navy-wide, whatever the case may be. But everybody executes them a little differently, and they have their little ways of doing things, and, you know... But I think the details matter to us because they matter in real life. And I think that's where, like, movies fuck it up, because they're like, oh, but it would be so much cooler if you did this. It's like, yeah, but in real life, nobody would fucking do that, because you'd get killed. So that's always a drag. So I guess I've kind of ruined war movies for my entire life. And I remember Black Hawk Down came out just before I joined the Army, and we started calling it, whatever we were in, the guys that joined after they watched Black Hawk Down, because it was like kind of an inspirational fucking recruiting tool. We called it Black Hawk Down Syndrome. Guys would come in and be like, oh, man, I saw Black Hawk Down, I'm going to be a fucking Ranger. You know, there's a lot of guys there's guys that came in, they were all full of fucking piss and vinegar, and they seemed like guys that were going to do really well, like when we started out in basic training, and those were always the guys that, like, got cut or dropped out or quit or were just complete pussies. It's funny how that worked, but it's true. I remember looking at guys like, man, he's going to be awesome. And in the end, I was fucking the last man standing, so I always thought that was kind of crazy how that worked out.
It was your nerd upbringing. I'm telling you, that's what it was.
I guess when I watched this, like, you all should have watched more G.I. Joe.
It was because you watched G.I. Joe.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
That must have been it. So how does one go from all of that to, I guess now, for what is it, like, 3 years you've been the editor-in-chief at joeblow.com.
3 years to the day, which is crazy. I saw it pop up on Facebook when I, like, made the announcement today.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Oh, shit. Thank you. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, holy shit, today's 3 years. That's crazy.
How did you get involved with the site? I mean, the site is something I was visiting, like, when did it open? Like, I think it was like
1998.
So I think like 99-2000 is when I really started going on the site. So,
You know, it's interesting because I got on the net with my AOL dial-up disk in roughly 97. I think when I had got like my first home computer, got connected to the internet.
How cool of you, man!
Oh yeah. And that is, you know, changes your life because, you know, for me, it opened up two windows for things that I wanted to find. One was movie stuff and porn. And so
dial-up porn, man. What an age.
I mean, I'm telling you, it was like at your fingertips. You don't have to buy magazines anymore. So it made it so much easier for everyone. But, you know, I started searching for movie stuff at that time, and I found Joe Blow and Ain't It Cool and Dark Horizons. Those were like my three go-tos. But Joe Blow was always my favorite because it was always fan-oriented. And it started with Burj Gherbedian, who is the owner, creator, is Joe Blow himself. And it was his reviews and John Fallon's reviews that were really, they were just like, they were me. You know, they were us. They were the everyday fan that was going to see a movie, and it spoke to me. You know, and Anna Cool had, they always had like these funny reviews that some asshole went and saw a screening of a movie, and he wrote some. It was more about like their kind of crazy zany writing than anything, and that's kind of changed over the years and stayed very much the same in other regards. And Dark Horizons, I just kind of fell off of. I just wasn't really checking them anymore. But Jobo remained always my favorite, and I would always save it for the last site that I would check in my daily movie grind. I was like, Jobo is last. Yeah, it's like the best. Save the best for last.
Yeah.
And this went on for years. And I actually tried out at one point. I think I was in between deployments between Afghanistan and Iraq. I tried out for the Blu-ray, for a Blu-ray reviewer position. And I did the whole tryout portion, and I didn't get it. Like, I remember I got an email from Burge, and he's like, "God, sorry, man. You know, it's like you're really close, but you didn't get it." And I was like, "Fuck."
Yeah, I wouldn't have fucking hired you, man. Can't believe they ever did. What the fuck?
Yeah, so I didn't get it that first time, but I wasn't deterred, and I still loved the site, and I was like, well, you know, it just didn't work out, that's fine, I'm not going to be like an asshole, and be like, oh, fuck those guys. But I just continued reading the site, and even when I was in, a funny thing about when I was in the Army is my wife would send me letters. You can't check the internet when you're in the Army, or when you're in basic training, rather. So my wife would send me, she would print out the news from Jobo and Ain't It Cool and put it in my letters and send me the news so that I could read. So I was staying up on my news while I was in basic training without an internet connection, which is insane. And then from there, you know, like when I was in Afghanistan, when I was in Iraq and I actually got a chance to go on the internet, I was on Jobo. I was reading Jobo. I was like, oh, what the fuck's going on? What's the news? You know, I was reading. And I responded to the style, which again, you know, I mean, you worked with us, you know it. We have opinions, not overt, like, beat you over the head opinions, but it's like we're speaking as fans when we report the news. There's some sites that just give, here's the news, here's the facts. Yeah. But we'll get the facts, we'll get the information, but then kind of a little perspective to go with it. And I always respected that and really responded to it. Because it felt like a fan. It felt like a fan talking to me and telling me the news, you know? So I always liked that. And basically I got out of the Army, and I was working for the government doing a similar job in a roundabout kind of way. But I hated it, and I just wanted to be done with it. And there was never a time that I ever gave up my passion for film or movies. I was always a movie, like even, you know, in the deepest throes of combat, I was still just a movie nerd. And I saw a job posting for a news editor, and I was like, well, let's give it another go. So I tried out, and shortly after I tried out, my father actually passed away in a car accident. And it was kind of like a really like rough time. I was going through like a really tough phase, and I remember I had finished the tryout portion, and I hadn't heard back anything, and I was like, well, it's probably not going to happen. I'll probably never hear back. And it's fine. I tried it. And I remember it was like 2 weeks after I'd gotten back from burying my father, and I got the news that I got the job as a news editor. And I was like, it was like this small, beautiful victory. And I was like, oh, it's awesome. And I was so excited, and I was ready to go. I was like, let's do this. And so I started as the news editor, worked for a news editor for about a year. And I think, you know, me and Burge, Burge and I always just kind of saw eye to eye. We had a very similar vision. We had very similar tastes. I think I understood the site in a way that, you know, he created it. I got what he was trying to do. And we just saw eye to eye. And I remember 3 years, just over 3 years ago, he invited me to Comic-Con to help cover it. I was like, fuck, this is great. This is a dream come true, man. Like, this is like the best. And I guess part of me going was also a tryout to see if I was editor-in-chief material, because the prior editor-in-chief, Mike Sampson, had left. Mm. And I remember when I first got hired, Sampson was still working. And I remember we only talked in email, and I talked to Sampson, and I was like, we were just going over the daily stories, and he was kind of, you know, helping me get underway. And he had mentioned, he was like, he's like, you know, I'm leaving in like 2 weeks, right? Like, this is like my last 2 weeks I'm leaving as editor in chief. And I remember as soon as I read that, the first thought that popped in my head was, I want your fucking job. I was like, how would you leave this job? How do you, you know, I didn't know the intricacies of it. You know, I didn't know the full situation, but just in my mind, I was like, how could you leave this job? It's like the greatest job ever, man. So at that point I was like, I'm going to bust my fucking ass at this job and prove my worth and show that, you know, I could be a potential person that could do this. Because I have a leadership ability. That's not a problem. You can check that block easily. But more than that, I just want to show, because I would love to have that job. That would be so fantastic. And I just busted my ass. It was plain and simple. I was like, I'm just going to write, and I'm going to work. And whatever Burgess throws at me, I'll fucking do it. You know, I'll make it happen. And so I did. And then at Comic-Con, we had sat down, had dinner, and he just mentioned it. He was like, hey, you know, I'm looking for a new editor-in-chief. You know, wanted to see if you'd be interested in the position. And I was like, yes. And I was like, absolutely. And it was very, like, very kind of low-key. I mean, it was just like over a dinner that it was kind of decided. And it was kind of, it was very, very informal in that sense. And I think he was just trying to gauge me and get like a feel for me. And like 2 weeks after Comic-Con, he sent me the official like offer, which of course I accepted. And ironically, the job that I was working at the time was putting me in a temporary position that was going to compromise my news editor job. And I was actually in a position where I was going to have to either quit Joe Blow completely or quit my day job completely in order to stay with Joe Blow. And so I actually quit my other job before the offer came through.
Wow.
I was kind of counting on it, but at the same time I was like, even if I don't get it, I'll be fucking miserable if I give up this job to work this shit job I'm in now. I was like, I'd rather just bite the bullet and see what happens. And thankfully, that gamble paid off, like, within days, because he gave me the official offer. I took it, and I was like, and that was all she wrote, man. And it has been a fucking crazy, awesome, wild journey to this point today. Literally 3 years to the day.
Yeah. Literally, as of this recording.
Yes. Insane.
Hmm. So you must love what you do at Joe Blow.
I do. I mean, it has its ups and downs, but definitely has way more ups than downs. I mean, I've, you know, traveled the world to places where people aren't trying to kill me, which is always nice.
That's nice. I mean, if you came here, I'd probably try to kill you, but I can't be certain.
Nah, you would try to kill me. And I've been to Australia before in the army, and nobody tried to kill me. So
that's because you didn't meet me, and I'm just awful.
That's true.
I'm a cunt, so there you go.
I would never say that, ever.
You can call me one.
No. That's not going to happen. You know, when I was in Australia, it was crazy. I remember being there, and, like, I remember just pulling guard, sitting just in the middle of the woods in shoal water. I just look out, and there's just a bunch of goddamn kangaroos just running in formation, hopping. Not running, hopping.
They hop, they don't run.
And I remember just watching them, I was like, this is fucking crazy. I'm sitting in Australia watching kangaroos hop through the forest, just of their own volition. Nobody's scaring them out. They're just like, they're just hopping along in a group. That was crazy. I wish I had more time to explore Australia while I was there, but I didn't.
You have to come back and explore it some
just more. Saw the suck-ass portion of Australia in the fucking bush, mate.
Yeah. You need to do a big tour of Australia and get the whole experience, which I'm not sure what that is, but I'd be a really terrible tour guide because it's not like I've seen a lot of this country, so.
Like, we're going to eat some food, yeah, and we're going to get high. That's
yes, it. It's not legal. We can't get high.
You can't get high in Australia?
You can, but it's illegal.
It's a what?
Like completely illegal. You can't even get it medicinally.
Man, fuck us. You can't have guns and you can't have weed. What the fuck?
Well, you can have guns.
No, you can't. They took all your guns away.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
Well, you better tell some of the liberals in America that, because they seem to think that all the guns have been taken away. And
no, there's actually more legal gun ownership now than there was 20 years ago when they put in stricter gun laws. It's just that there's strict gun laws.
Yep, that's what it is. That aligns with what I've heard as well.
Yeah, you can get a gun. You can go shoot it. I mean, I don't want a gun because I wouldn't trust myself with a gun. Put any kind of weapon in my hands, I would abuse that power.
Mm.
If I were given like superpowers, I would be the ultimate supervillain because I am easily corruptible.
Well, that's not good.
That's not a good idea.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I have guns. Obviously. I don't think that's hard to understand.
Hmm. I was going to ask you something and I completely forgot because we started talking about how corrupt I would be if I had weapons.
Completely. Corrupt.
Absolutely just terrible. Like, there's no way I'd be the good guy.
I feel like we've taken people down a dark path. Maybe we need to lighten things up.
How would we lighten things up, Paul?
I don't know. I mean, you could ask me, like, craziest experiences or something. Or
yeah, what's your craziest experience? Shit. Tell me.
Like, in life or as editor-in-chief of Joe Blow?
Well, you can tell me a bit of both.
Mm.
Go for it.
In life would take a great deal of thought. There's plenty to go back to, but
well, you have to tell me about the craziness of Joe Blow.
I don't know that. I mean, I think that there's crazy things that have happened with various people. I mean, I remember my first year at Comic-Con, I met Burge and John Fallon, the arrow in the head, who's now, he's kind of graduated on. He's doing his filmmaking thing, which is awesome and tremendous. He's doing great things there. And I remember we were out one night and he's like all fucked up. I remember we were walking back because San Diego closes down like way too fucking early. And the streets are packed and all the bars and everything are like filing out and there's just people everywhere. And John sees like some cops and he decides he's going to like go start a fight with these cops. And he starts walking towards them like, I'm going to fuck you up. And I was like, oh shit, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, does he? And I remember running after him and grabbing him. And stopping him and like pulling him away. I was like, oh, no, John, you really don't want to do that. And that was when I got my first John Fallon experience. And my other John Fallon experience was, I think, he was a little leery of me taking over as editor-in-chief and he kind of wanted to put me to the test. It was before the job was offered to me. And we ended up at the Tilted Kilt in San Diego. And John's way of testing me was to arm wrestle me. So we sat down to arm wrestle. And I think he expected he was just going to just take me out, like right away or something. I don't know. And I beat him the first go round. He was like, what the fuck? So we went again. And I can't remember if, like, I just, either he won on his own or I let him win, but I could tell he was like really frustrated about losing that first bout. And so he won one, and he was, like, very happy. And then he needed to do it again to kind of, like, you know, assuage himself and be like, yes, I am the clear victor. So I beat him again, and then he got even angrier. And he was, like, banging the tables and, like, throwing shit. And I was like, damn, this means a lot to him. So we continued arm wrestling, I think, like, four or five times. And it just kept – it was, like, a back and forth. I would win, he would win, I would win, he would win. And I think in the end that was the thing that won his respect in me taking over as editor-in-chief was our arm wrestling at the Tilted Kilt. And surprisingly, Eric Red, the director, Eric Red, Body Parts, he was there with us because he's good friends with John. And I remember I sat down and I had a like 2 hour conversation with Eric Red, and we talked a lot about Body Parts because I love Body Parts. It's such an awesome movie.
It's a cool movie.
And it was just like, it was so surreal. Like, I just got done arm wrestling John Fallon to basically get to win his approval to be editor in chief, and then I was talking to Eric Red for like 2 hours about Body Parts. And for somebody, it was like my first experience outside of sitting in my office in my pajamas writing for the site, where I was like around people and around any like celebrities or anything, and that was my first like big exposure to it. So that was kind of an eye opener for me.
And now you're a pro.
Yeah, to a point.
To a point.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I've had way more experiences now. I've obviously interviewed quite a few celebrities and whatnot. I certainly don't get a big head about that. I mean, you get, at a standard junket, you get about 4 minutes with these people. Mm. You're ushered in like cattle, and they kind of like, okay, go. Like, the clock is ticking, and you have 4 minutes to ask these questions and then get the fuck out. They're done with you. They don't get the fuck out. Next. You know what I'm saying? I think people, like, they kind of build it up as a much bigger thing, but it's really not. And with 4 minutes, you only have so much time to really get anything worthwhile. So
yeah,
that's always the biggest challenge. I know we have had people call us out in the comments before about, like, oh, you just ask a bunch of standard bullshit questions. Like, bro, we have 4 minutes. What the fuck do you think you're going to get in 4 minutes? Some kind of goddamn uncovering confessional or something? They have 4 minutes to talk about the film. So that's always a fun thing to counter in the comments section.
Yeah, I was going to say, comments section anywhere, no matter where, it's always like the worst possible thing in existence.
It really is. But I will say this, for Joe Blow, anyways. I mean, I'm the moderator, so you've never been banned, you can blame me, at least in the last 3 years. But the thing is, I think that if we let comments section just run rampant, you know, I treat it this way. Joe Blow is like, it's like my restaurant. If you come into my restaurant and you're loud and belligerent, you're swearing at everybody, you're treating people like shit, spraying graffiti on the walls, I'm going to kick you out. And I'm going to clean your graffiti off the walls. Because it's my place of business.
Yeah.
And why would I allow that? And I've had people who are like, oh, Joe Blow, it's censorship. Shut the fuck up, man. Like, this is a place of business. This isn't your free speech platform. This is just a place where you have come to post your comments, which we have allowed you to do and can disallow you to do. But as a rule, like, we're pretty cool, man. Like, I mean, it takes a lot to get me to go in there and start fucking banning anybody or moderating. But when it, is necessary, I will, because you don't want to let that stuff just go off the handle, because it affects other readers that come in there and they read it and they're like, oh my God, this is just so ugly.
Mm.
Like, I don't even want to be here. You know, it like sours people on even wanting to come to your site, because you're like, look at it. Because then it's like, if you went into that restaurant and you saw just a bunch of rowdy assholes spraying graffiti all over the place, why the fuck would you want to eat there? So that's how I look at it, and that's why I take moderating seriously up to a point. You know, I don't want to keep people from saying their thoughts, and I won't ban people for, for speaking those thoughts. But once you become a complete ass bag, you're done.
I mean, I think, like, you can always say there's free speech, but I think there's free speech to a point. Like, you can say what's on your mind, but you don't really need to be an asshole about it. You don't need to go overboard. And it's so, like, whether it be Joe Blow or anywhere, like, looking at comments on, someone's review, and it's just like, shut the fuck up, you dickhead. Honestly.
Who's ever said that? No, I mean, that's completely true. I mean, there's just too many. The thing is, we don't owe anybody free speech there. Like, we're not inhibiting free speech in any way. You can have free speech anywhere. You can go stand on a street corner and scream to your heart's content whatever you want to scream. You can start your own blog and write whatever the fuck you want to write. Nobody's stopping you from doing that. But if you're going to do it within a platform that's owned by somebody, then there's rules. End of story. And we do have rules. And I think that if you don't enforce rules and you have rules, you look like even bigger of an asshole.
Yeah. I think the worst, and this has been the topic of conversation, like, everywhere. Like, you write a review, it's a fucking personal opinion, but then you get blasted for it. And it's like, it's a fucking opinion, it's not fact. Get the fuck over yourself and move on. Dick shit.
Oh my
dipshit.
God.
I don't know what the fuck I was insulting with that. I don't know what I was talking about. I'm just angry. I'm not referring to you, obviously. I mean the idiots.
No, I got it. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's a big thing right now. I mean, it's shit all over my Twitter today, for God's sake, over fucking Suicide Squad. You know, I mean, you have... In this sense, you have people that are kind of attacking a film because a lot of people loved it, and a lot of people didn't. And you have people fighting over it, a right or wrong kind of thing. But that's just not the case. Like, it is simply a personal preference. And it always amazes me how personal we take film. Like, we really take film personally. We have no stake in making them, unless you're a producer or a writer or a fucking extra or some shit. You have no fucking stake in this movie. But we take it so deeply personal when somebody either likes or dislikes something we like or dislike. You know what I'm saying? Like, people just lose their fucking minds. And that's what's going on, like, right now over Suicide Squad. Like, I loved Suicide Squad. Loved it. I thought it was awesome. It was total blast. It was totally fun. And there's people that absolutely hated it, and they're taking to Twitter, and they're taking to even, like, the trades. They're like, how did, like, Suicide Squad was a huge hit, but DC needs to make better movies. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? Like, it's a huge hit. What's the fucking problem? But anyways, you have people calling up like, I don't care if you like it. It doesn't matter if you like it. It's bad.
It's bad. It's like,
who the fuck says?
But it's like, oh no, it's a bad movie. It's like, well, no, that's your opinion that it's a bad movie. I enjoyed it. It's a good movie to me. I'm not saying my opinion is fact, but your opinion is not fact. It's an opinion. This is what fucking pisses me off so much about all of this. It's like, I don't give a shit what you like, what you don't like. It's your own fucking opinion. That's what makes it awesome. It's your own view. Why would you insult someone for having an opinion if it differs from your own? Doesn't that make things more interesting? Wouldn't it be a boring world if we all loved the same shit and hated the same shit?
Yeah, we'd all be fucking drones, man. Like, I mean, it's like I said, you know, Hurt Locker won Best Picture. It's a fucking inaccurate piece of shit. For one, that's kind of fact. But if you enjoyed it and you had a good time watching it, hey, good for you, man. I mean, enjoy it. I don't give a fuck. In my opinion, and based on my life and the things that I've witnessed, it's garbage. But if you enjoyed it, that's cool.
Well, you know? Somebody liking that movie does not affect your life in any fucking way.
No, not at all, man. Like, I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to work, I'll get some coffee, I'll probably go to the gym, and I won't give two shits what your opinion is, because it doesn't affect me.
Exactly.
Nor should it. Nor should my opinion affect you. If anything, when I give my opinion, I'm only offering my perspective. If I were to write a review, like I did for Suicide Squad, it's just a perspective. It's nothing more than that. It's like, hey, this is what I saw. This is what I felt. Enjoy or don't. I don't give a fuck. It's up to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something people need to grasp. And that's like, I wrote a Come On Hollywood editorial this past week, or last week, about this whole obsession with ratings and scores, which has just gotten so out of hand. It's disgusting. Whereas people don't even read reviews anymore. They go to the review page, they scroll down to the score, and they jump right into the comments. So literally all those words, those blurbity blurbs that you wrote, who gives a fuck? You gave it a 7. Let's jump into the comments. This is not a 7, it's a 5. Like, people are getting in there and they're arguing over a fucking number or a score or a number of stars. How the fuck is that? And they're like, you're supposed to give a score. Like, no, you're writing thoughts and musings and giving a perspective on a film you saw. If you weren't doing that, you would just, like, you'd open the page and there'd just be a big fucking 7 right there. Like, why write anything at all?
Well,
just post your number, you know? And that's why for my Suicide Squad review, I gave no score. I was like, you know what? And I thought about it as I was leaving the movie, and I was like, you know, no score, for one, is going to satisfy me.
Yeah.
It's not going to satisfy anybody who's reading it. And it's going to completely distract from what this movie is. And so I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try something. I know it sounds like so crazy. I'm just not going to give it a fucking score. I'm just going to write what I thought and see what happens. And by doing that, you actually force people to read what you wrote, which isn't like, hey, you need to read my fucking beautiful Shakespearean fucking review. It's like, no, but it is a review, and I did write some things. If you wouldn't mind just taking a gander, just read. It's only like 8 or 9 paragraphs that they promise you. You don't have to do a book report after. And then you can read it, and you can find out what I really thought. Because how do you encapsulate all of your thoughts and your feelings about a film with a number or a score? I mean, when you sit down to talk about a movie, do you sit down and be like, yeah, that's a 7.
No.
That's a 6. No, that's a 5. And is that all that's said about the film? You're arguing over numbers? That's fucking bullshit.
It is.
I think that it's getting away. I think the whole obsession with scores is getting away with our true appreciation. And not only that, but our ability to talk and discuss film.
Absolutely.
Because we're no longer talking about the movie itself, talking about numbers.
I agree with you 100%. And I have been doing my writing for a long time. And for me, it just started off as a way that I wanted to express myself. But then people started reading and paying attention and enjoyed what I had to say, even if they didn't agree with it. And that's what I love. And that's what I still love about doing it. But it gets to a point where it can get really frustrating because what I have to say gets taken down to a score that I've given. And it's like, well, why don't you read what I fucking wrote? The score is meaningless at the end.
If it's not too much to ask.
Well, yeah, it's not like my reviews are that long. It just depends. Like, if it's if it's Warcraft and I just drone on for 2 pages, whatever. But normally my reviews are maybe a page. I put in what I feel and how I feel because that's how much I love movies. That's what they mean to me. All my feelings are there. And, if I'm sure people listening are fans of, obviously, supermarcy.com, and they may have read my piece about Stand By Me being my favorite movie ever and why it's my favorite movie ever and how much that movie means to me, so much so that it really saved my life. I mean, that's the passion I have for cinema. And I just can't stand these little fucking dick face, cunt stain assholes that just fucking want to complain. Grow the fuck up. Honestly.
Fucking cunt stains.
Cunt
stains. I think I've never said cunt stains in my life.
Well, now you have, thanks to me.
Until now.
Yeah.
On the Super Marcy podcast, I finally said cunt stains.
Yeah, you said cunt stain. And now you're going to use it every day.
Fucking, yeah, on my son. You know, cunt stain.
You fucking cunt stain. Get to your room.
Like mortified. She'd be like, what? Like, what did you call me?
Yeah. So I'm getting very angry.
Super Marcy.
Super Marcy's gotten angry. That's because this whole subject is so stupid. Like, why are people so stupid?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that, it kind of goes back to why I always loved Joe Blow and why, like, I love working there now is that it's always been about and should be about just our passion, our shared passion for film and nothing more. These, like, segregated groups of, like, I'm a Marvel, I'm a DC.
Who gives a flying fuck? Movies.
I'm like, bro, in 1990, the best comic book movie I fucking had, outside of Tim Burton's Batman, was goddamn 1990s Captain America, which was a travesty. Terrible fucking movie. And I remember reading, like, Starlog magazine and just, like, dreaming, like, fuck, am I ever going to get, like, a worthwhile superhero movie? And now they're coming every year, man, and they're, like, with A-list talent and great filmmakers. And even then, you're still getting people like, it's a great stars, but, they didn't really nail the narrative, and, like, the editing was like, and, like, it's like, what? Shut the fuck up.
Can't you just enjoy a fucking movie?
Like, you know how good you have it, but no.
No. Very entitled. That's the thing.
The article, the argument I was having earlier is like someone was saying like we should demand better films. Like, what the fuck are you to demand anything? What the fuck have you done to demand jack shit?
Go
write a script, take your ass to Hollywood.
Yeah, get
your ass in there and make something better, but demand it? What do you deserve?
Because
you read a comic book, you deserve something?
It's the fucking people just feel so entitled to everything. Well, no, you're not fucking entitled to everything. Get a fucking life.
And here's the thing. It's cool. If you didn't like Suicide Squad, you didn't like the way they executed it, you felt like it didn't do the source material justice, that's fair. But to demand something more, something better, that's like looking at a painting and saying, I demand better art. And then if we're going to argue about, well, Suicide Squad's not art, it's like, well, fuck you, man. Really? So David Ayer's not an artist. He's just some fucking asshole that showed up one day and made a few calls on set. That's fucking bullshit and it's a cheap shot. And the bottom line is these people are busting their ass to make films, and some of them make better films than others. Got it? Just like some artists paint better pictures than others. But in the end, it is art.
It's subjective.
And they followed their vision and did their thing, and maybe you liked, maybe you didn't. But you sure as fuck don't have any right to demand something better. You want something better, go make it your fucking self. That's the way I see it.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. I just think they're entitled little shits.
That's fucking bullshit, man. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I demand.
I'm going to go to Hollywood and I'm going to demand a good movie, goddammit.
Myself a fucking sign that says better Suicide Squad. I'm going to stand in the Warner Brothers lot. You're like, fuck you.
You know what? I'm going to march over to some porn set and demand better porn because it's too acted. I can't buy that these people are getting off because it's just, there's too much acting. It's got to be more real. I want to demand realism in my porn. God damn it.
I don't know. I don't think anybody's been complaining about porn. There's literally, like, every possible fucking porn you could dream of.
Absolutely. But no. You're
gonna live in a porn utopia. If you can't find porn that suits you, fuck. I don't even want to know what your fetishes are, then. Because there is something for everyone out there at this point.
There is.
The porn market has been fucking nailed. I mean, pun intended. You can find anything you want.
See, I enjoy watching porn parodies. They're just so stupid that I'm not watching them for any other reason than to laugh.
I mean, they are pretty funny.
I demand a porn parody that gets me off, goddammit.
I demand more accuracy to the source material in these.
Stop making me laugh, porn parodies. I want to get off.
I think I have the 1960s Batman porn.
That is hilarious.
It's kind of hilarious. But it's on DVD, so I don't ever watch it. I mean, porn, if you're not watching porn on the internet at this point, I mean...
It's a bit silly.
Using discs. I mean, you're pretty... Yeah. That's beyond old school, which is really saying something.
Unless you have porn VHS, then that's even more old school.
Jesus. I don't even have a VHS player anymore. Yeah, I wouldn't even know... If you get somebody a VHS, they'd be like, there's literally... I could watch this. I'd have to break it to the Smithsonian and steal a VHS player. Like, we got it! Let's watch this motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but like... Sorry, I always bring up porn because I'm just a weirdo. But I was making a point about people demanding stupid shit.
Listen, there are billion... Porn is a billion-dollar industry. Everybody's watching fucking porn.
If they're not,
all you people that are saying you don't, you're full of shit, which I made quite clear at the beginning of this, that everybody is full of shit.
Everybody is full of shit.
Everybody's watching fucking porn. All y'all motherfuckers are watching porn. Go ahead, don't admit it. I love how people like give us shit about movie hotties. I can't believe movie hotties still exist. Like, site that has pictures of women that pose for the majority of those photos in magazines, you can't share those. Somehow that's wrong. Somehow that's in some way sexist or nasty or whatever. It's like, so if we could just go ahead and get a permission slip for where men or women can look at such pictures, if someone could just let me know where that's okay. You're like, oh no, you can only do that stuff in the privacy of your own home now. You can only do it with porn, with the door closed, where nobody's watching. It can only be a private affair. You can't put it on the internet anywhere else. Such fucking bullshit. Hypocritical fucking bullshit.
It's very stupid.
So dumb.
Very stupid. I enjoy the once a day movie hotties Instagram post.
Those have just recently, we just recently started up those, the Instagram pages, Arrow in the Head, Joe Blow, and Movie Hottie.
Which is always fun, because I love Instagram. Obviously, you do too, because you're always on my fucking feed.
Oh, actually, like maybe daily, I'm not always.
All the time.
And as we said, you know, it's, there's not that much. It's pictures of my kid doing crazy shit. It's pictures of animals and me getting drunk by my fire pit in the backyard and the occasional gym selfie. That's really about
it. And then tomorrow that'll be like your kid's reaction after you called him a cunt stain.
Cunt stain. Just called my kid cunt stain. Just his reaction. He'll just be like, he'll probably just be like, throw some gang symbols.
He is a funny kid, I gotta say.
He is. He's a. He keeps me on my toes. He keeps me. I don't know. He's the next generation, so
make sure he doesn't feel entitled to demand things. Then you'd be a good parent.
Fuck that! I dare him to come demand some shit. Come in here right now! I'm like, I demand you get off this podcast.
It's like come no fucking way.
Nerf battle with me. Get the fuck out, cunt stain.
Cunt stain. Now, I've grilled you with questions. Are you going to ask me anything? Because I would like to answer something. Anything you'd like to know.
What is your relationship to Betty? Betty Germain.
Bede Germain.
Bede. Is it Bede?
Bede.
I would say Betty when I read it.
It is Bede, and I've accidentally called him Bed.
It's called Berger. Berger. That's fucking name. I was like, Berger.
Bede. Bede.
Is he your boyfriend?
Fuck no.
He's just a friend.
We met on the Joe Blow forums back like 8 years ago.
If you're listening, Bede, I'm very sorry.
No, I met Bede on the Joe Blow forums like 8 years ago. He was known as Terra Australis back then. And we were talking, and then I'm like, oh, well, you should talk on my podcast. So we did. And I couldn't say his name, so I just called him the Terrible Australian, and it's a nickname that stuck. For his birthday 1 year, I even got a t-shirt printed that says the Terrible Australian on there. And then we met in person, and then he moved to Melbourne, and we've just been best friends and one of my main site contributors ever since. And basically, my other job is just giving him shit all the time. Because I'm a really nasty best friend for someone to have.
I mean, I knew you guys had, like, some connection. I just wasn't quite
and
sure.
And that's it. That's Bede.
No physical connections.
Fuck no. Unless I'm hitting him for some reason.
I'm sorry, dude.
He needs a smack in the face every so often.
We love you. I mean, I see him on Twitter. I see him on Facebook. I don't know him. I get a lot of, like, Facebook requests. And stuff. Anytime somebody requests to be my friend on Facebook, I'm always like, are you sure you want to be friends on Facebook? Because that's the only place where I share any type of political stuff is on Facebook. I don't share any political stuff on Twitter or anywhere else. I'm always like, I seriously hesitate to like approve anybody on Facebook. And it's not like I do it rampantly. And I try to be very fair and balanced, and like, not like Fox News, but I try to like be, you know, kind of diplomatic and to stir conversation. But in the end, you're gonna get a feel for like where I stand. So a lot of times I'm like, I'm not, like, just posting cat videos, man. Are you sure you want to fucking be my Facebook friend? But whenever I get a Facebook request, I'm always like, better to find me on Instagram or Twitter if you just want to do movie stuff. You really want to get deep into my fucking head? Movie Facebook friends.
Yeah.
And you're like, sorry. And then you're just going to fucking hide me. So why bother?
Yeah. Well, you don't bother me, so it's fine.
I am not of the same mindset as the vast majority of my peers. We'll just say that.
don't know. Do you want to talk about it? Because you're more than free to, if you want to speak your mind.
Oh, I mean, it's just follow me on Facebook. No, I mean, it's like the vast majority of Hollywood itself. This is not a mystery. Breaking new ground here, but the vast majority of Hollywood and the journalists that report on it are very liberal-minded, democratic voting people. I am not. Does not mean I am a Trump supporter, because I am not. I think he's a buffoon. I think Hillary is a fucking jackwagon. I think they're both the absolute worst pieces of shit that we could dream up to vote for. So I don't swear allegiance to either of those assholes. But I am definitely not of the same mindset as the rest of the crowd that I run with. And that's fine. And the truth is, like, I've made some really great friends in this business. But I also, a lot of times, when I run into, you know, some people, I'm like, you know, there is a very stark contrast. And I can get along with just about anybody, but in the grand scheme of things, I am definitely not of the same mold. That doesn't make, again, doesn't make me better. Doesn't make me worse. Just I am different. I am not.
Your view is your own. And again, it's the same shit with all the movie stuff. It's like, respect that someone feels that way and move on.
Sure. And you know, we're all built of our life experience and where we come from and who we are. And to try and say that we're not is complete bullshit. Because we are. We're all products of our environment. Every single one of us.
Mm.
You know, I am a, you know, fucking, I'm a white dude from middle America that joined the military. Now I'm a combat veteran. And I've been a passionate lover of movies. I'm also a artist and a graphic designer. And all of that has shaped everything that I am. And a lot of that time, most of the time, there's big aspects of that that do not align with the kind of hive mindset that goes along with being a Hollywood journalist. So there's that. Again, it doesn't make me better. It just makes me a little different than what you're going to find.
An individual. You are not a sheep.
No. No, 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 no. I'm not a sheep.
No. You could never be a sheep.
No. And, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, as you were asking me before, you know, I've always been kind of a lone wolf in that regard. And if I'm not the lone wolf, then I have to be the leader. And if I'm not the leader, I'm the lone wolf. And that's pretty much the way it is. I'm not a follower. I never have been. And I don't even mean that in some kind of, like, again, some high and mighty way. It's just that I just can't do it. I disagree too much, and I feel differently, and I think differently, and I'm just like, when I see things are fucked up, I can't just be like, oh, well, fuck it. I'll just go along with it for now. I guess it's not who I am. I'm like, no, fuck no. I'm not doing this. No fucking way. So.
It's fine.
Just go ahead. But you know what? That is not, again, I've met so many people here. Like Dan Casey from Nerdist. I don't know if you know this, but he was in Japan. He went to school in Japan, and he speaks Japanese. And it's really, it's fascinating. Like, you meet, you know, everybody has, like, these different facets to their personality if you really get to know them, regardless of political viewpoints. I don't think that's what we're all built of. Certainly affects us, especially in an election year. But, you know, there's all, you know, everybody has, like, these, you know, fascinating things about them. And I think it's important to get to know those things and not prejudge them or be like, oh, well, they feel this way about this thing, so I automatically dismiss them. But, you know, it's our differences that really make us special and who we are. Otherwise, again, it's as you said, you know, if we all like the same shit, you know, we're just a bunch of drones, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I find it fascinating to listen to you talk, find out more about you, because I enjoy finding out more about people. I enjoy people. I'm a weirdo, what can I say?
Let's just be honest, you just like the gym selfies.
I do, that's all there is to it. I don't give a shit about anything else.
You've literally been talking in my podcast, and all I just wish you would just post it on gym selfies.
I'm just like, I want more gym selfies, fuck off.
So let me ask you this then. What is your, what is your ultimate goal for where you are right now? You're doing reviews, you got your site, you got, this is like, you got a couple of podcasts, right?
I'm an in-demand voice, so what can I say? It might be the Australian, it might be the fact that I have a vagina, I don't know. It could be both.
It's the vagina, the accent, that's it.
And the boobs.
And the Bosque figures.
Yeah, that too.
That's your, everybody likes.
My ultimate goal for myself is to just keep doing what I'm doing, to keep having a life and to not have my health problems take over to a point where I can't do it anymore. This is what I do to keep myself going every single day. And if that's taken away from me, I may as well just die. That's my goal, is to keep going, to keep doing it, and not let the pain that I'm in every single day just ruin and rule my life.
I think that's the end state goal for, should be the end state goal for everyone, is to find something they love that they could not see themselves doing anything else. I think once you found that, then you found it.
Yeah.
You know, like you found that drive, that inspiration, that passion. It's something that everybody chases. It's the one thing that every teacher preaches for you to find. The one thing your parents always tell you to find, even though they'd rather you go to fucking school and get a real job. But in the end, that's what we all preach, isn't it? You know, do what you love. But I think it's a lot easier said than done for a lot of people. I mean, I think for me, I've just always done what I wanted to do. It was never a question of, maybe I should consider this or consider that. It was always just like, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to do it, like from everything. Remember when I was a kid, my parents, I told my parents, like, I'm going to be a comic book artist. That's all I did, but I drew comics. And they're like, well, that's nice, but yeah, you have to get a job. So I was like, what the fuck? So I just kept drawing, still drawing to this day, still drawing comics to this day. And I was always into film, and same thing for the Army. I was like, I have to find out. I'm going to go. Everybody tried to talk me out of it. I was 25 years old. I had a college degree. I'm like, what? You're 25. What are you going to go to war? And they're like, you're going to be a paratrooper? Like, why? Why are you doing this? Like, why don't you go to, like, do a safe job where everything's like, no, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find this out one way or another and see what happens. So, but I think that's important. I think that should be for everybody. It's like, just don't fucking compromise, man. Just do what you're going to do. You know, chase it like a man pursuing breath who's drowning in the water. Like, you cannot stop, you know?
And I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to do or have this series of podcasts, because I think it's important that people feel inspired to do what they really want to do. And what I've always wanted to do is just to write about movies and do something with movies. It's all I want. And, you know, despite my setbacks with my health, because obviously I can't have a normal job because it kind of prevents me from doing that, I still have this and I can still do this. And I don't care if I don't make $1 billion doing it. If I'm happy, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
I think happiness far outweighs monetary gain unless somebody just offered me money for no reason, then I would gladly take it. Or unless I became an assassin and got lots and lots of money, then I'd consider that. Did I say that out loud? Jeez.
You definitely don't want to get into this line of work for the money, because you will be eating top ramen for a long time.
Yeah.
Have something else that's, you know, in terms of paying the bills, like something, you know, to kind of work your way into it. That would be my advice. Anybody that wants to get into film journalism is don't stop. You should be if you want to get into film journalism, you should have a blog right this fucking second. You should be writing every day, every single day. There should never be a day that you're not writing something.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, you have to find some type of backup that will pay the bills while you're trying to make other things happen. I think that's one of the drawbacks, as we were talking about, like kind of the entitled generation, is that, you know,
yeah,
you're going to have to suffer a little bit. you're going to have to. Like, I remember I talked to this chick that got into it. When we kind of first connected on Twitter, it was like this old dude like threw this conniption fit over our job posting because we put, like, we'll give you hand jobs. It's just a joke. It's a fucking joke. And this dude's like, this needs to be killed with fire. It's like, go fuck yourself, man. It's a joke. But we promise we're paying in U.S. standard dollars. You know, but we're not, it's not paying a lot. It's not a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? But at least it is, you're getting paid to write. And that's kind of a beautiful thing this day and age, because anybody can get on the fucking internet and write. And the other thing is, we are not a corporation. This is still a mom-and-pop operation since 1998. We don't have corporate big bucks. They're just not there. But aside from that, it's like, you know, this chick was like, you know, oh, you know, this is what we pay at our site. You know, we pay these fucking... This is our flat rate, and we make it known. And I was like, well, that's great. I don't have to disclose it to you, because I'm not a publicly traded organization. So I don't really jack fucking shit, and I'm not going to tell you shit. You know, she's like kind of saying it like, I need to know your rates, please. And I'm like, no. I'm not telling you my rates. You don't need to know my rates. Like, are you applying for a job, which I'm not offering you? And I said something to the lines. We had a conversation for a while, if that's what you want to call it, on Twitter. And I was like... she said something, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I was like, you know, like, experience, you know, getting the experience means something. Like, that's part of, like, what makes you a great writer. And she was like, well, that's a bunch of bullshit. And I thought about that, and I was like, who would really think that? That experience is bullshit and wouldn't make you a good writer? Like, what the fuck makes you a good writer? You go to a four-year college where some fucking jackass instructor fucking... strokes your genitals and tells you everything is great and everything you put out is wonderful, even though you've never done a goddamn thing in your life. Like, go live life. That will give you something to write about. It'll give you perspective. It'll give you vision. It'll give you something. And this chick was like trying to tell me, like, well, that's bullshit. You just need to fucking have a degree and we'll pay you $800 for a fucking article. I'm like, if that's the kind of shit your site is pumping out, I definitely don't want to fucking read it, because you got a bunch of fucking bullshit pumping out of there.
There's no experience with anything.
What kind of insight are they going to provide? They're going to provide regurgitated bullshit from their fucking liberal-minded Ivy League college, if it's even Ivy League, which is doubtful.
See, how come when I was at, well, it was more Arrow, but I didn't get hand jobs? I feel that's not right.
Well, I mean, it's not real. Like, you don't really get hand jobs. It's just, that's completely Burge's humor. It's one of the things that's been in, it's like kind of a sad fucking state of PC culture that you can't say, hey, well, you know, we'll give you some handjobs. Like, as a joke. Like, as an aside joke, too. You can't even say that now without some fucking asshole turning into, like, some social justice fucking campaign on Twitter.
And here I was just sitting there going, there was no handjobs when I worked there. They just gave me money every so often. I'm missing out on the hand jobs. God damn it.
Hand jobs.
I wanted hand jobs, not money.
I mean, dude, someday I'd probably take hand jobs over money. I'm just being honest. But, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was just a joke. And, like, god damn. Like,
I know, you can't have a sense of humor. You can't say anything without offending somebody.
Oh, god. And you know what? I don't fucking care if you're offended.
I don't give a shit either.
Like, why? But why should you care?
Why
does being offended matter? When did that matter? Who fucking cares? When does being offended something that's like, you don't have a right to not be offended. Kiss my ass. I'm offended by plenty of things if we're defining it that way. I'm offended by HBO's Girls. I'm offended by so many things, but I don't sit there and be like, I am offended. This needs to be rectified. It needs to be taken away from my sight. It can't exist. I am just all offended.
If something's so offensive, why do you still look at it? Just don't? Maybe?
People just, they forget that they have the option. They have filters. I mean, you can,
right.
You can turn things off. You can block things, mute things. Like, it's not like social media has been thrust upon us without any kind of option to tailor to our own perceptions, our own needs, our own taste, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You have the tools at your hand. Just fucking, I mean, if I offend you, by all means, unfollow, block, unfriend, hide. I understand, and I am not offended, because that is your true right. Your true right is not to not be offended. Your true right is to just not listen to me.
That's exactly. Fine.
That's fair. Trust me, that's what I do to plenty of people. I'm like, well, you're a fucking idiot. I'm about done listening to your dumb shit.
Yep. You see you later. Yeah. Take your Suicide Squad bullshit out of here. Take your internet scores out of here. Fuck off.
Exactly. But, you know, and I don't attack people like that. That's not my game. I'm not just like, well, you, hey. I hate when people tag everybody and everything. I'm like, it's just the two of us. We got to bring Joe Carnahan into this for. Everybody's like, you know, like, they tag stars and all this other stuff. And I'm like, that's just some asinine. For one thing, they don't fucking care.
They're not trying to. Would they?
For one thing, they don't give a fuck. You know? So it's like, yeah, hey, we'll just have this conversation. But, yeah, it's pretty silly that people get so wrapped up in that. You have options.
Yeah, I know, it's really silly. Like, if somebody's listening and they're offended by this conversation, they can turn it off.
Oh man, they checked off like an hour ago. Trust me, nobody listened anymore. Yeah. This is you and me talking.
This is just us talking shit now. This podcast hasn't ended, but we're just talking shit.
If anybody is still with us, God bless you, for real. I hope you get a Super Marcy medal. If she doesn't have those, she needs to make them.
No, don't give out free hand jobs, if you ask nicely.
The Super Marcy hand job. I'm offended.
Are you offended because I didn't offer one to you first?
Alright, well, now I'm gone. Offense has been rescinded.
Well, there we go.
As long as it's fair and across the board, we're good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's never been sexual favors actually given, to my knowledge, for anybody, any employee of Joe Blow.
Except when I was there. No, I'm kidding.
None for you.
No, sadly, none.
I think Chris Bumbray would probably abuse that privilege anyways. He would abuse the hate jobs.
The only favor I want from him is just that French talking, because I don't know what the fuck he says, but I love it.
Have you spoken to him before?
Yes. He has been on one of the podcasts where he spoke... his fucking Quebecer French, and I didn't give a shit what he was saying. It was just, oh my god.
I love me some Chris Bunbury, and true story, Chris Bunbury and I, along with one of our newer writers, Sean Wist, will be reviving the Joe Blow Movie Show podcast within the next month. So that is coming.
Well, there you go.
Exciting time. So now you can get all your Paul Shirey and Chris Bunbury and Sean Wist meets coming up in the next month.
And I will listen to it without my pants on.
That's really the only way to listen to it.
Yeah.
If you listen to it with pants on, you're missing the point.
No. Pants off.
In fact, we'll give a warning at the beginning of the podcast. Like, everybody please...
Take off your pants. Down.
Podcast is about to begin.
Yeah.
Shall we begin?
I should have actually said at the start of this podcast, pants needed to come off, but I didn't, so...
I mean, yeah.
How stupid of me. Yeah, how stupid of me. This is not good.
You fucked that up.
Yeah. I don't know if there's much else to say, unless you wanted to ask me something else. I don't know.
How should we finish with Super Marcy?
I'm sure a lot of people have said that.
It's a loaded question. Holy shit. Man, yeah. I like this podcast. You could not say these things on many other podcasts.
No.
They'd like be hitting the bleep button or some shit.
Oh, fuck no. We don't bleep out on this podcast.
There will be no bleeping on the Joe Blow podcast either. I simply cannot... There's just no way for me to monitor myself in that way. So, you know what I was going to ask you? I think, are you a comic reader?
Yes, I am.
What are you reading?
That's a good question. I read DC Superhero Girls. Which is, I know it's aimed at children, but it's also can be read by adults. It's fine.
All right, so you're not reading serious comics.
I am. I come and go with them. I'm reading a lot of locally produced, as in from Melbourne, comics.
That's a deep investment right there.
Yeah, I know a lot of people.
I actually really love like locally made comics when I go to local comic shops in any town I go to, and they have like most places have a little section for their local artists and stuff, and it's some really cool shit.
Well, I know some of these people, so I can get my hands on this stuff. And I think the last other comic, because I have a massive pile to read, but I read the, it was a 6-issue Poison Ivy comic. I think it was The Life and Death Cycle or something like that. I can't remember, but it was really good. And there's all the DC fucking Rebirth and whatnot.
Yeah, I've been reading some of Rebirth. It's really, it is exactly like the new 52 all over again. Mm-hmm. I know that their intent is to bring back the continuity from the earlier years, but it really just reads like new 52 part due.
Yeah.
And that's, it kind of sucks.
Excuse me.
But I'm just following creators at this point. Superman is the best book they have right now, in my opinion.
Well, my superhero was always Superman and Supergirl. So when I was growing up, I had Supergirl, the movie, to inspire me.
Which is a terrible, but just tremendous movie at the same time. It's so fantastically awful. I love it.
It's the most beautiful movie ever, and one of my most proudest days was interviewing Helen Slater because she was Supergirl.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And she's still hot.
She looks the same.
She looks amazing.
So that was a very proud day for me, anyway. So, yeah. And I have the novelization of Supergirl somewhere.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got to interview Shawnee Smith once for Hottie Stop. And she was kind of like a childhood crush. So I got to kind of live that dream a little bit. And she was pretty cool, but she kind of went off like on... She went on this, like, this huge religion tangent for, like, 10-15 minutes, and I had to just, like, cut it all out of the interview because it was, like, it just, like, went way off course, and I was, like, yeah, I'm not gonna put that in there. That's just, like, kind of weird. But she was so cool and everything else, and she had, like, Charlie Sheen stories, so.
Ah.
But that was cool.
Anyways. Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you get to meet, like, your childhood crushes, and it's just, like, weird.
Or even current. I got to interview Eva Green, who I'm in love with, and that was pretty amazing. Every now and again, you get to talk to somebody that is, you know, you kind of have like a little crush on, or that you're just kind of enamored with, or that you just really respect too. At the same time, you don't have to like have sexual desires.
I have sexual desires for everybody. It's just natural.
For everyone, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's
yes, that's why when I do interviews on the website, I don't have pants on. I'm naked, basically.
Otherwise,
I can't handle doing it. They have to see me naked.
Of course. I wear a furry outfit at home if I interview people.
Oh, really? You're wearing one right now. It's amazing.
It's at the cleaners right now. But any other time, I'd be wearing my chipmunk outfit talking to you.
Yeah, that's amazing. Totally amazing. And I think that wraps up the podcast, I guess.
I think you should be done with me. I don't know what more I could offer.
Oh no, I'll toss you out to the side in the bin.
Get out, you tosser.
Yeah, tosser. Tosser. Tosser.
Is that like for a gay person? Like a gay derogatory gay term or something?
No, tosser is like same as a wanker.
Oh, okay. See, I'm not all that familiar with
that. I mean, if it's not, I've just said it the wrong way. I don't know, but that's what I consider a tosser to be. It's just another word for wanker.
You're terrible Australian.
No, that's bead. I'm the amazing Australian.
But he's not really an Australian, though, right?
No, like, he is.
Oh, okay. So he's from Australia. Yeah. Oh, but, okay, I mixed that up when you said he came to Melbourne.
He was in a different state.
Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
All right, mate.
Yes.
No worries.
Yes. And at the end of podcasts, like, I always am like, yeah, okay, so where can people find you? But I think we've already established where people can find you. They can go fucking tick a house and just murder you.
I am not hard to find. If you want to murder me, just be advised.
You have training.
I have PTSD and I have weapons.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
So, it won't be easy.
Yeah. I've seen all those movies. I know how it works. Movies are accurate, god damn it.
Up to a point, yeah, you know. Like I said, you know, you don't just turn that switch off when you come home. It's that light's still on.
Yeah.
So. But if you just want to follow me on Twitter, I'll talk movies and call out bullshit from time to time. Have my own bullshit called out, which I welcome as well. You want to follow me on Facebook? Well, that's your prerogative. I do share my political views from time to time there, so be advised.
Mm-hmm.
I do also share occasionally cat videos, pictures of my child, who is awesome, though. He's not a regular kid. He's an awesome kid. And you can follow me on Instagram for gym selfies, if you're so inclined, if that's your thing. Super Marcy can or cannot attest to that.
Yeah.
Or you can find my... my daily writing on JoeBlow.com, the best movie news site on the entire internet.
Yeah. And I think, what's your fucking Twitter name? It's Arctic Ninja, I believe.
Yes. At Arctic Ninja. Which is a byproduct of my paratrooper days, where I picked it up.
It's not you're in the Arctic and you're a ninja?
There it is. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what we always call ourselves, because we're Arctic paratroopers and... ninjas, just a bunch of cool guy bullshit.
Yeah. So there we go. And if people have no idea where to find me, that's fucking shameful.
It's Super Marcy, for God's sake.
It's supermarcy.com. It's facebook.com/thesupernetwork. It's twitter.com/supermarcy. You can try and add me on Facebook, but I don't give a shit. And I'm very picky with who can follow my Instagram. And
Facebook.com/cunstain.
Yeah, pretty much. And hate mail, send it to Bede, because he loves that stuff.
I want to do a podcast with Bede here, too.
Well, next time, we will do another kind of podcast, and Bede will be on.
I think Bede would be fun to fuck with.
He is fun to mess around with. In... a non-sexual way, because I would never do that with Bede. That is disgusting.
You keep saying that, but I'm starting to suspect otherwise.
Ugh, it'd be like touching my brother. Oh, God. Gross.
Like we said, there's porn for everybody out there.
There is, indeed. and with that, that is the end of the podcast. Thank you, Paul, so much for this wonderful conversation. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry for everybody that I bored to tears.
Yeah, just ask for a handjob conversation. He'll do that for you.
Yes.
Okay.
Handjobs and Joe Blow go hand in hand.
Yes, they do. And with that...
Enough said.
Yeah, and with that, see you later. Trouble over land and sea and air.